Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate that you listen to the podcast. Make sure you subscribe and also leave us some feedback. Rate us. Give us a review. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoy.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
I've got actor-comedian Steve Byrne in studio. He is at Helium Comedy Club, 7:30 and 10 tonight, 7:30 and 10 tomorrow night. Welcome to Portland. Welcome
back.
Thank you. You're here before, yeah?
Yeah. Love the city, yeah.
Yeah? Beautiful. You say that all the time, though.
I genuinely love the city. I think it's, I like it. I live in Los Angeles, where it's always nice, and to get some weather, it's, you guys are probably over it, but I like this, so it's
great. Like the summers. We say we have the greatest summers, because the winters are not good.
Yeah. Well, that's what everybody's. Everybody
I love this summer.
I'm from Pittsburgh, so I think there's like some similarities between Pittsburgh and here. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, there's an overabundance of hipsters here.
Yeah.
But Pittsburgh, I mean, you know, we got the bridges, we got real people.
Civic the downtown, pride. Does it remind you of Pittsburgh a little bit when you see
a
the rivers?
Bit, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Except no Heinz Field, no PNC Park. You know,
yeah, not a tradition of winning. I don't want to get into that, guys.
I did like the people in Pittsburgh because I felt like the people in Pittsburgh were very family oriented, like
very
big
much so,
families.
Yeah. I mean, as much as we love it, I mean, it's black and gold 24/7, 365 days a year. But it's like one of those cities where if you're, you know, a Ravens fan, you can still come to the Heinz Field and not have to worry about getting shanked or, you know, anything like that. Whereas like if you go to a Raiders game or something, it's just like, I'm just a spectator tonight. I'm not rooting for anybody. Yeah.
Just happy to get out of that stadium.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm alive still. When did you know comedy, acting? What came first for you, comedy or acting? What's the path?
I went to Kent State and I studied theater for 4.5 years and never got cast in one production. So comedy came first to me. I never intended to be a comedian, never went to a stand-up comedy club, never saw a show live. But I got a job in New York City. My first job in New York City was Caroline's Comedy Club, just answering the phones and seating people, and ended up getting a job and watching comedians night after night. I was like, that looks like fun.
Yeah.
So 4 months later, I tried it. And I would say it's like the first time I had sex. It was quick. I couldn't wait to do it again. And I cried afterwards. And that's kind of what stand-up was for me. And I knew that night, I was like, that's it. I'm doing that the rest of my life. And it's been 21 years since September 30th, 1997.
That's awesome. And I think for anybody who lasts that long in comedy, like, you have to know what you're doing, right? I mean...
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Yeah,
or like, you have to really like it, because it is... It's ultimately job or rejection. I mean, you're 9 times out of 10, the new stuff you bring to the table is going to bomb. You know, 10% of the time, something will work, hopefully. And it's that accumulation of 1 out of 10, 1 out of 10, 1 out of 10, making that hour turn into something special.
How do you know, like, when you get some material, let's say, I don't know your process, but let me say you observe something, maybe make a note to yourself. Mm-hmm. How do you work through that to the point where you know that's funny, or who do you bounce that off?
Well, I don't think you bounce it off anybody until it's, like, decent enough that a comic could help you with a tag, and a tag is just, like, a secondary line or a third line. But the audience is the ultimate judge of what is going to work or what is not going to work, you know? I'm doing this movie right now that I just directed and wrote, and the only way we know that the film is working is through multiple test screenings. We've had 8 or 9.
Yeah.
So you keep doing it, and it's the same thing as stand-up. And eventually, it starts figuring itself out, and the audience ultimately tells you what the movie needs, what the movie doesn't need, and the audience will tell you immediately if a joke works or does not. And it's just then you got to rely on your, you know, tools of the trade to accommodate that dead silence or that joke not working.
The timing in live theater and comedy is one thing, but when you're doing a movie, is that not having an audience, is that difficult when you don't have a live audience there?
Yeah, because even things that get like, you know, like a crew laugh, right?
Yeah.
There's somebody that we had, I think, like 12 different comedians in this movie. And it's like, stay scripted on 2 or 3 takes. Once we get the take, then you can have a free one. And free one's basically, go ahead and improv.
Yeah.
And in the improv, you get a lot of set laughs. The crew would laugh. I would laugh. I would say 95% of the time, that improv will not work for the film because you got to stay on story. So I think it's very, the laughs on set are dangerous. You don't want to get intoxicated by that big laugh, but it's like, well, it's not going to work for the film, though.
Yeah.
It was absolutely paramount to that day, and maybe they're acknowledging something that happened on set, but not to the film.
We're talking to Steve Byrne, actor, comedian. He's at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 7:30 and 10. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. You're Korean-American.
Yep.
Do you talk race? Is race your...
Oh, yeah.
Is it race your big thing? Because I my wife is from Taiwan, and
okay.
So our kids are halfies.
Yep.
Okay, and so I always think about things that I never thought about before I met her. Like,
right.
You know, and people will tweet things at me that are derogatory, like, you know, saying one guy tweeted at me, he was mad about sports, and he said, "Oh, Godzilla's going to get your kids," and I was like, "How's that funny?"
Right.
But do you growing up?
I'm mad at you for diluting the master race. But what were you saying?
Did you growing up, like, the Korean culture, is that a funny culture? Or
yeah, I mean, a lot of people don't know this, but once you obviously you're privy to the Korean culture, Korea is like Ireland. You know, you think of Europe, you have many different kinds of white people, and Asia, you have many different kinds of Asians, but Koreans are the Irish of the Asians. We're jovial, we're the most outgoing. We love whiskey, we love potatoes, we hate the sun, just like the Irish. So there's, you know, they're willing to fight at any moment. Yeah, there's a lot of similarities. You know, I think the difference is maybe height and, you know, a loss of ginger hair, I guess. But yeah, I think I don't know. I like the dynamic because there is this chip on the shoulder in both cultures, and I definitely have that for sure.
I was in Beijing, and we went into a video store when video stores used to exist.
Yeah,
and there was no comedy section in China. Like I wondered. I go, okay, they don't have a comedy. Like
right.
Everything was drama. Everybody was dying. It was like the death of the samurai, the Red Lantern, and all.
Yeah,
it's heavy. And I thought, wow, that's not a culture that's laughing a lot.
No, I think, look, Asians, for the most part, are not known for having a great sense of humor. They're known for intelligence, you know, bad driving, and maybe crazy porn. But, like, especially Japanese. But I think that's where Korea, like, really comes into the fold, where anybody that goes to Korea is always like, I had the best time, and karaoke bars and partying. I mean, Koreans party hard. So if you're ever going to go to Asia, you're thinking, oh, I want to go to Mount Fuji, I want to go see that. I want to go to South Korea. You'll have a rockin' time.
We're talking to Steve Byrne. I want you to see him tonight at 7:30 and 10 at Helium Comedy Club, or tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. Do you do sports? I mean, are you a sports guy, sports fan?
Yeah, played hockey all my life. I still play, dabble. You know, we had a comics league for a while where it's like me and Bill Burr and Ian Bagg would get a bunch of comedians that played hockey. We'd play on Tuesdays and have a blast. I got to skate with Mario Lemieux, which is one of the coolest things I've ever done.
Yeah.
With this, he had this fantasy camp where it raises money for his cancer foundation, and Bill Burr and I went and did a show for them, and we got to skate. And it's like one thing to, like, you know, you're in eighth grade, you're playing junior high school hockey and stuff, and you pay and you go see this legend of the game. I mean, top five hockey players of all time for sure in our city, and then to, like, put a sweater on and sit next to him on the bench and receive a pass from him. And it's like, I have a puck, what do I do? It's like, you pass it back to one of the greatest players.
Yeah,
and that's what you do, and you pass it back. And that moment for me, just that kinetic moment where receiving a pass, giving off to him, and then another game of coming down the ice as a defenseman and pivoting backwards and then seeing Lemieux come down, it's like, I was like, I could start crying. This is like such a crazy emotional moment for me. But that to me was like the ultimate.
When I got a chance to cover some hockey games as a journalist, the thing that struck me was the size of the players and how good they were on the ice. Like, I had no idea how good they were skating. Like, just incredibly graceful. One of the best. I think it's the best live sport.
That's what everybody says. I mean, it truly is. There's a constant motion of action, other than, you know, I mean, you have whistles, but football, stop start. Baseball can drag, you know, playoffs are great, but regular season is pretty. And basketball, if it's a blowout, you know, it's back and forth. But hockey, you have the intimidation factor, you have the physicality, and you have the constant flow of action. And the boards are, I think, like the other element. When somebody gets rocked against those boards, I mean, the whole crowd in that whatever section, they're feeling that too. So I love nothing more than I'd love to go to a hockey game and just put the earbuds in, not go with anybody.
Yeah.
I just love the constant information and the flow.
Where's the best place to sit at a hockey game?
Well, I think center ice, you know, definitely probably 15, 20 rows back. But if you're a fan of the team, then obviously sit on the side where your offense is coming down twice. That's where you want to be. So you see the artistry. And it's always like the little things, too. Like Sidney Crosby, there's so much we take for granted. But these little things that he'll do with a pass in between the legs or just Patrick Kane the other day, he caught a pass skating up on his backhand, not even looking at it. And that's just, it's just an immense, it's those 10,000 hours. That's where it comes through, right?
Yeah, it's like when you watch professional golf and everything looks easy to those guys. And then, you go play.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh my God, this game sucks and I'm terrible at it. And then you hit one good shot and you're like, it's the consistency and the little things.
It's, you hit that one good shot and you're like, I got to ride this euphoria train. Right. Let me get to Perkins and hook up with a night shift manager and maybe 19 other women and cheat on my wife. Yeah, it's that feeling.
We're talking to Steve Byrne, actor, comedian. He is in studio. He is at Helium Comedy Club tonight, 7:30 and 10. Tomorrow night, 7:30 and 10. You've done this for 21 years. So when you first started, you're answering phones at the comedy club.
Yeah.
Then you get on stage. At what point did you feel like I have made it? Like this is making it?
I don't think I've had it yet, to be honest with you. I think that you're always trying to, you know, I think like, I don't know, you got to do something that resonates, I think, at some point. And I think, you know, it's be careful what you wish for. And I think ultimately for me, maybe this film will be what I've always wanted, but it's not the way I wanted to happen. You know, I think you're going to do an hour special that resonates and people are like, oh my God, that was one of those specials you got to see. But I think I've been doing this for so long. I've had 4-hour specials. Yeah. I'm working on this fifth one. It's the best one I've ever done, for sure. It's got a through line. It's got everything. But I think that this film may overshadow everything I've done.
When's it coming out?
I think probably summer or fall maybe is when it's going to happen. But I think that might be the thing. And I think when you're young and you're starting, you're like, oh, I'm gonna be this great comic. But it's like maybe the best thing I've ever done in the comedy game will be a feature film that's written about my experiences in stand-up. And I'm not even in it.
But, you know, because some people I've heard say getting on Jimmy Kimmel was, that's when I knew I made it. Is there a danger?
That's a dumpy goal.
Yeah. Is there a danger in you going, hey, getting that Comedy Central first half hour special, then I knew I made it? Do you always have to stay hungry?
You always do. Because even when I had a sitcom on for 3 seasons, it's like nobody cared. You know, for 3 seasons, I couldn't get on a late night talk show. I was getting better ratings than Schumer or even like Minnie Kalik, for example. Like our show was doing really good ratings, but it's like, what does the media care about? Where are they going to focus their attention on? Yeah. And it's never getting bitter or anything. It's just like the reality of the numbers and stuff. Yeah. But for me, you think, okay, I'm going to get a show. Now I'm going to do theaters. It's like, nope, still in the club. So it's constantly reinventing yourself and how do you stay relevant? And I think this feature for me and this doc I did about Jonathan, this new hour, maybe one of those things will catch on. Maybe none of them do.
What the feature film is called? I mean, can we?
The opening act, yeah.
Okay.
So Vince Vaughn produced it. Jimmy O. Yang is in it, Alex Moffat, Cedric the Entertainer, Whitney Cummings, Eliza Schlesinger, Angela Johnson, Kathleen Madigan, Bill Burr, Ken Jeong, Russell Peters, Tom Segura, Neil Brennan, just a ton of great comics.
Yeah.
It's fun.
That's awesome. Because you're getting to do what you want to do with that.
Yeah, for sure. And that was definitely a learning experience because when it was actually happening, it's like, okay, we found the financing. We're going to do this. Vince is like, what do you want to do? Do you want to be in it? I'm like, well, I'm too old to be the MC and feature, and I'm too young to be the headliner. Yeah. So I was like, I don't know. Maybe I'm just happy that it's being made. He's like, well, why don't you direct it? Nobody knows the story better than you. I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And so you hear you're going to direct it. And then I took master classes with Scorsese and Ron Howard online. I read all these books. Just throw it all out the window. None of it matters because it is the most overwhelming thing I've ever done professionally. It's like the triathlon of entertainment, I feel, because every fiber of your physicality and emotion is invested for 12 to 14 hours a day solely on this film.
Do you ever want to get back to theater and do like live theater, which you started with at Kent State?
No. I love stand-up. Yeah. Stand-up's the best. Stand-up, the osmosis of writing something that is just a sliver of a thought that you feel there may be a tinge of humor to it. And then seeing it expand, and it I don't know, there's nothing like that to me in the world. I love it.
Steve Byrne, see him tonight, heliumcomedy.com for tickets, 7:30 and 10 tonight, 7:30 and 10 tomorrow night. I'm going to try to get my wife, we're going to go to the gym, or we're going to come see you. Is that a,
that's
is
what
that a
every
bear?
Entertainer wants to hear. You know?
I think
it's a toss up. I might check my mail. I might go see. I don't know.
You got to know what the gym. We have two young kids. Getting at the gym is a big deal. Or come
look,
see you.
Getting a night out in general is a big deal because I got a 6-year-old and a 3-year-old. Yep. I know exactly what you're talking about. But thank you for the consideration. That's
we'll
a very
tonight,
polite
hopefully.
Thing to say. Yeah.
All right, Steve All right. Byrne, check him out at Helium Comedy Club. Leave it here. Larry Holder, columnist who covers the New Orleans Saints for The Athletic, will be with us momentarily to talk about that. Every Friday, we do the golf report in this segment. Can we do that, Bobby? Can we do the golf report? Got time for that? We'll do the golf report, and then Larry Holder will be with us, and we'll talk Saints.
The golf report, teed up by the Reserve.
The golf industry and a golf foundation, the National Golf Foundation publishes the Golf Industry Report, put out today that the on-course participation base for last year was 23.8 million golfers. Included in that were 20 million golfers who they consider to be the most committed golfers, and about 3.8 million who are new golfers. They say that that on-course participation base remained stable. 82% of those who play account for 95% of all rounds that are played. It's an $84 billion industry. Why does golf pay attention to that? Well, traditional golfers who golf all the time and are repeat golfers keep the industry stable, but it's new young golfers that the industry wants. The off-course-only participation pool increased from 2016, 7% over 2016 to this year. They're saying that their next goal is to get to 32 million golfers. But golf welcomed a record number of first-time players in the last year. They said 2.6 million beginners last year. That number needs to continue to grow. First-time golfers into the sport. Golf looking for a lot of younger golfers out there to get involved. It's the Golf Report. It's brought to you by The Reserve, and I cannot wait to get back out on the golf course and play some golf. I would not be a new golfer. I would not be a beginning golfer, but I'd be a golfer who'd be eager to increase the number of rounds that I play this year, especially out at The Reserve where I love playing. That's the Golf Report. Larry Holder will be with us coming up. He is a columnist, and he covers the Saints in particular for The Athletic. We're going to take a deep dive on the Rams and the Saints. We've talked a lot about Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady. What about Drew Brees and Jared Goff? We'll talk about that with Larry Holder coming up on this great Friday. Man, it's Friday already. Wow, this week just flew.
It did fly.
We've got a holiday coming up on Monday, Martin Luther King Day. What does a holiday mean when the government's already shut down? You know what I mean? Does that change anything?
I don't think people know. I mean, people aren't in government that have a holiday, I don't think they think about the government, except for maybe if they have to go to the post office or something.
I hope the people who are most affected by the shutdown will get some relief soon. That's what I hope. And I know a lot of people who are affected by it. And for all the people out there that are working with the hope that they'll one day be paid for these hours, I'm with you. It's not good for anybody. Larry Holder coming up, columnist who covers the Saints. I'm going to ask him about Drew Brees. Drew Brees versus Jared Goff. I like the Saints big in this game. But what are the danger areas for the Saints? Leave it
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald Face.
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.